Welcome to Buffalo Bills Review. This is a show by Bills fans and for Bills fans. Every week we're going to be talking Bills football, and this week we have a special edition for you. In this show, we are going to be talking to one of the great all-time Bills, speedy number 82 wide receiver Don Beebe. In this special edition, we're just going to ask Don some questions about where he's at now and his time with the Bills, and we're going to get right into that now with Josh and Greg. Hey, Bills fans, here we are. We're here for another edition of the Buffalo Bills Review, and we said that this week we have a special guest with us, and that is true. My name is Greg from Palmyra, New York, the Rochester area, and I am a big Bills fan. And with me tonight, as always, is Josh.
This is Uncle Josh in the Natty.
Uncle Josh is here. We don't have Dave Drake tonight. He's down in Louisiana. We'll talk about that later. But with us tonight, joining us from the 1990s Buffalo Bills Super Bowl teams, is a wide receiver, a speedy wide receiver, number 82. Don Beebe is with us.
Hey, Greg. How you doing, Josh?
Hey, Don.
Hey,
thanks.
Don, welcome.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight. We are very excited to have you here and looking forward to talking to you about some of your Bills career and other stuff and where you're at now. And we'll get right into that right now on the Buffalo Bills Review. Well, we have with us tonight Don Beebe. I tracked Don down on the internet. I was looking for some of the Bills from the Super Bowl teams. I thought it might be kind of fun to find out where some of the players are now that we might not hear a lot about. And I happened to find Don pretty quickly out in Aurora, Illinois. I found him on a site for the Aurora Christian School. Don, what are you doing out there these days in Aurora?
Yeah, first of all, I was born in Aurora and grew up about 10 miles outside of Aurora in a little town called Sugar Grove. So after I retired from the NFL, me and my wife decided to locate in the area here. And now I am the head football coach at Aurora Christian High School, and that's probably how you looked me up there.
That is right. And, hey, I noticed that there's a few other BBs on the team there, on the staff with you. What's going on there?
Well, I tried to make it a family affair. My brother is the defensive coordinator, my dad's the video guy, and my college roommate is a wide receiver coach. So I got to hire all the people that I know, and I made it a family and friend deal. So we're having a lot of fun.
That's great. And how long you been doing that?
This is my second year, and we're really enjoying it. And we're right now we're having another run at the playoffs like last year, and we're excited about it.
Cool. What's the record this year so far?
Well, last year we went to the quarterfinals and we landed up 10-2, and this year we're starting out we're 4-1.
Great, awesome. And I noticed also that you have another thing that you're doing as well as the coaching. You also have something called the House of Speed. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. When I retired from the Packers in 1998, the spring of 98, I started a business with my partner, Dr. Jeff Shute, called the House of Speed. And what the House of Speed is, it's a business that trains any boy or girl from any sport that's 8, 9, 10 years old, all the way up through a lot of professional athletes. And we train them to be faster, quicker, jump higher, more explosive, lateral speed. Basically, your overall sports performance is what we do.
Now, I was wondering when you... when I saw that, I've always thought that, speed is something that you're born with. Like you're fast.
Yeah.
And so what kinds of things do you do that help people get faster? I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, well, when we started the business, I've heard that a lot. People always say, well, you can't teach speed. Come on, Don, what are you trying to do? And I tell them, well, you know what, I agree with one aspect of you can't teach speed. You can't teach world-class speed. Certainly, I'm not going to take every kid and make them a 4.2, 4.3, or 4.4 in the 40-yard dash, but to take 2 or 3 tenths of a second off, in my mind, is very easy. And to be honest with you, to take 2 or 3 tenths of a second off your overall 40 speed could be the difference of making it or not making it. And I'll give you probably one of our best-case scenarios. Greg Lewis, who's the starting wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles, mm-hmm. came to us about 3 years ago, and I personally trained him in a one-on-one session, and he was a 4.65 guy, 4.6 or 4.65 in the 40-yard dash with the University of Illinois. And he wasn't even going to get a free agent shot. He was a third wide out at U of I and a slow guy. Well, he came and he trained for about 3.5 months every day. And when his combine came up and he was timed by a pro scout, he ran a 4.38. Now, he went from off the charts to now getting a free agent shot, and he just signed a 5-year deal and he's starting to caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl. Now, there's a real, obviously, a great case. But even a kid that I see in grade school or high school that, you know, isn't really, his foot speed isn't really very fast, or she's not very quick, or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden they start training, and they do it religiously, and they really are into it. They start seeing great benefits of it, and next thing you know, they're starting on their high school team or their grade school team. And that's what it's all about. We do speed camps all around the country. We actually do one every July at the Ralph Wilson Fieldhouse in Buffalo.
Cool.
We've been out to St. John Fisher at the college there in Rochester to do a camp. We'll probably be back there again next July. And we're, you know, it's just something that I love to help kids out as much as I can. And, you know, you know, if they can start on the team or get their college paid for, and who knows, you know, if a kid gets a contract someday, I get thrilled about that.
That's great. Now, Don, how many kids are you talking about? You said you worked with the one guy one-on-one from Illinois, University of Illinois. But how many at a time? Is it dozens or thousands or hundreds?
Well, we've trained over 10,000 athletes already.
Wow.
And, you know, we do private lessons. We'll do small group sessions. We'll do teams. We've trained like teams like the Chicago Bears and colleges of that nature, you know, professional athletes. So it all depends on what you want as a customer.
Yeah.
You know, in the speed camps, we'll get anywhere from 50 to, you know, a couple hundred kids at a camp. So it all depends. And I guess my whole thing of why I got into this is I knew I had a calling with athletes and kids to be a role model. And I've always had this motto and kind of my mission statement is, if I can make an athlete a better athlete, I think that's great. But if I can make an athlete become a better kid, that's even better yet.
That's great. Hey, Don, is there a website or some way that people can find out more about House of Speed?
Sure. They can go to houseofspeed.com.
Okay.
It has all the information, or they can call our toll-free number, which is kind of easy to remember too. It's 877-82-SPEED.
Nice.
So it's pretty easy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Bills fans can remember that one.
Yep.
Hey, you also mentioned that you said you'll probably be back at St. John Fisher in July next year.
Sure.
Is that around the Bills training camp time?
We usually come in a few days to a week before the camp.
All right.
And so it's a good time that people can come in, catch the speed camp, and then go to the Bills training camp for the next couple of days.
That sounds great. All right, I had kept this interview not a secret, more of a surprise to the listeners out there. Just saying that we were going to interview somebody from the 90s Super Bowl teams, but I did tell a couple people that we were going to get to talk to you and asked them what they might ask you. And first question that a couple people asked me was, they wanted to know, how's your head after that flip play in Cleveland in 1989?
Well, to be honest with you, I still have ill effects from that play.
Really?
Even today, if I'm sitting for a while, I'm driving in a car for a long distance, my neck will actually cramp up, and my wife has to rub it out. But yeah, it's where you get a lot of built-up scar tissue in there, because what happened when I landed on my head, I tore my neck muscle.
Yeah.
And which wasn't very, very good.
It really didn't look very good.
No, it didn't feel good.
And that's crazy. So you still feel it today. So what is it, 15 years later or whatever? And you played your whole career with that. That was your first year.
Well, you know, when I was playing, I used to get worked on, you know, twice a week just to make sure that the scar tissue was out and everything like that. But now that I'm old and I don't get worked on anymore, that scar tissue builds up in there. So I feel a lot worse now than I did when I was playing.
Well, that does come with age. Hey,
yeah, I know.
I meant to ask you, Don, what's your time in the 40 now?
Oh, You know, last time I was timed, I was, 37 years old, somewhere in there, at a speed camp. I was timed at a 4.38, but 4.39. But I'm not sure. I could never run that now. I know that.
Do your high school players challenge you to a race ever?
Oh yeah, nobody's beat me yet. But there's going to be a day that's going to come real soon.
That's probably
that.
True.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's great. Hey, Josh, did you have any plays you wanted to ask Don about?
Yes, indeed, Don. I'm interested in your take on the infamous Leon Lett rundown and the. In the Super Bowl against Dallas. Tell us a little bit, what was going through your mind as you see that big beast of a man running down the field with the football?
Well, it was one big beast of a man. And, I just was doing a fly pattern down the left side, and I turned around and looked to see the ball was thrown, and I saw Frank running for his life, and the ball came out. And Leon, I stopped, and then Leon picked it up, and I just reacted. I just started taking off as fast as I could to try to tackle the guy. And when I was running, I didn't think I was ever going to get to him. And I was basically thought, if I do get to him, I'm going to actually have to jump on his back to try to tackle this big man. I'm not going to take this guy down. Well, he would have rode me right into the third row of the stands. I wasn't going to bring the guy down. Anyway, so as I'm running, he puts the ball out. And he makes my job easy. And I just slapped it out of his hand inside the 1 yard line. Now, still today, I use that play as an illustration when I do banquets or I coach the kids and talk about it. And two things that I talk about, one to the parents, if I was doing a banquet, I tell parents, I say, if you bring your kid up right, chances are that you're going to increase the kid's chances of making the right call. And certainly there's no guarantee, but, my parents brought me up with that kind of atmosphere. Don't ever give up. You play till the whistle blows, and remember my dad is beating that enemy, And I never even thought about it. You see, when you get into a situation like that, when you don't have time to think, you just react. Well, you're going to react in the way that you're brought up. I believe that. And I just reacted that way. See, most kids aren't brought up in that kind of atmosphere, and they would have jogged 10 yards, and you would have never noticed. Nobody would have ever said a word if I would have jogged. They would have never even seen me on film.
Mm-hmm.
But yet everybody noticed when I sprinted and ran them down.
Yep.
Now, here's what I say to the kids, and I think the really important thing is you never really know what's going to happen until it happens. And when it happens, you can never bring it back. So you better give it 100%. Because if you take it from my point of view, it's been obviously a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
I never thought anything of it. I really didn't. Sports Illustrated article, the thousands of fan mail letters that I got. I never thought anything of it until after the effect, after it happened. And then look at the reverse side of it. I did a Sports Illustrated article 2 months after this had become such a big thing that they wanted to do a piece on it. Well, I sat down with Leon down in West Palm Beach, Florida, and this is the first time I've ever spoken a word to him. And I come to find out, I couldn't believe this, but he told me, he told the reporter, he was afraid to go get his mail. This was 2 months after the Super Bowl, and he was still afraid to go get his mail.
Wow.
Because he was getting hate mail, racial mail, death threats, and this was all because the numbers should have changed. 59-17 instead of staying 52-17.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, people wanted to kill him because they bet thousands
right.
of dollars on this thing.
Wow.
And so I tell the kids, look, here's a guy's life just changed because of a simple play, and all he had to do was finish. All he had to do was try,
yeah.
And I'd have never caught him. And I tell you, it hits at home because when you start talking about people's lives over a silly play, you better give it your all, and then you can live with the result,
yeah.
You know? So that's my take on the Leon Lett play. How's that?
That's great.
That is excellent. Let me just say that was by far the proudest moment I've had as a Buffalo Bills fan. Seriously, we're getting destroyed.
Right.
And really that play defined, I think, everything that Buffalo stands for as a city. And it was just great. And I would have much rather, lost with you guys than won with those drug addicts in the Dallas locker room. And cocky, arrogant Leon Lett. And it was great. It was really a defining moment for the city, and without a doubt, one of the top plays in Buffalo Bills history. So thanks for the example that you with so many people.
I appreciate the kind words, and I think you're right. I think it does epitomize, you know, Marv Levy, Bill Polian, the whole Buffalo Bills organization, and certainly Western New York. I mean, there's no doubt that's the type of people they are. And you know, it's funny that you talk about that, because when I won the Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers, and I remember I was the safety guy as Brett Favre was kneeling down, and I was standing behind him. And I remember as the clock was ticking down the last 10 seconds, all I could think about was, you know, Marv Levy, Bill Polian, John Butler, Jim Kelly, all my teammates, all of Western New York. I wish they could have experienced what I was feeling at that time. And even when I carried my son off the field and my daughter, and I'd go into the locker room, you know, here they are, this 2-year-old and 4-year-old kid. All I could think about was just all the people that were watching that game thinking, geez, what a great thing for Don. And I just wish they could have been feeling what I was feeling.
Yeah, that had to be a kind of a bittersweet moment.
It was.
Because you had been, was that 2 years after the your fourth Super Bowl with the Bills?
It would, yes, 3 years, because 94 we didn't make it, 95 I went to Carolina, so then 96, so it would have been 3 years.
Okay, yeah. Not too long after, and just the whole four Super Bowls in a row. As good as the Patriots are, I don't know if they can equal that. That's an amazing feat, even though there never was a win.
Yeah, you never say never, but that's certainly one thing that is going to be very, very hard to repeat.
Yeah,
you know, four in a row is crazy, and you know, as history looks back, and it already really is. It's looking as that as one of the greatest teams of all time. Even though you never won a Super Bowl, they understand that four in a row is crazy.
Yep.
And the talent that we had on the team, we were more talented. I'll tell you this, that the reason we couldn't win one in Buffalo and I won one in Green Bay, I can tell you what my take is on that, is the leaders on the football team during the course of the game would not let the emotions get too low. And what I mean by that is this, and I'll give you two illustrations. When you play during the regular season game, the hype is just, I mean, it's phenomenal. As a player, you're just so hyped up coming out that tunnel. You can't even explain the feeling. But that pressure grows and the emotions get higher as the games get bigger.
Yeah.
So when you get to the ultimate game, I mean, your emotions are so high that when you have a turnover or something, you know, be it in my position, a drop pass or something, your emotion can get so low. And see, in Buffalo, and I'll give you the best example, Super Bowl 28, our fourth Super Bowl. I mean, in that first half, if you go back and watch the first half, I mean, we were only up at halftime, you know, 3 or 4 points, somewhere in there, but we're kicking their tail.
Yep.
I mean, physically, we're owning the line of scrimmage and everything like that. Then we come out in the second half, and like the third or fourth play, somewhere in there, we fumble the football. Thurman fumbles the football, and James Washington picks it up and scores a touchdown. Now, at that point, we're only down, again, just a few points. You would have thought we were down 30 if you were standing on the sideline. It was like a needle in the balloon. I mean, guys were just upset. Nobody was talking to anybody. It was like just moping. I couldn't believe it, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember it like it was yesterday, you know, the emotions that were on that sideline. There was no way we were going to come back and win that game. No way. So now let's fast forward a couple years when I was with the Packers. Well, we go up 10 points. It's 10-0 on the New England Patriots. Next thing you know, right at the beginning of the second quarter, they go up. They go bam, bam, score 2 touchdowns. We're down 14-10. I believe at that point in time, Buffalo kind of folds tent emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They would never been able to get over it. Well, Green Bay, I remember the sideline, all the leaders, and certainly at that point I was one. I was not going to lose another one.
Right.
And Reggie, Eugene Robinson, Leroy Butler, guys like that were, hey, we're okay. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. It was all positive. I mean, it was unbelievable.
That's cool.
By the end of the half, it was 27-14. We were winning.
Wow.
The game was over. And that was the difference in the team. We had more talent in Buffalo as far as talent. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah.
But as far as the leaders on that football team, I think that's what the difference was in that game.
Don, I actually remember the first year that you were playing in 89, your very first catch was, I don't remember if I was at the game or if I just saw it on TV, but it was a huge bomb, 63-yard touchdown pass from Jim Kelly. How great is that?
Yeah, it was kind of a unique way to break into the National Football League.
Yeah.
You know, it was on a national televised game on a Saturday against the Houston Oilers. And I remember my whole family was back home watching the game.
Yeah.
And I remember getting to the huddle because at that time we weren't in the Kagan offense. This was in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And I would come in as a third wideout on third down. So the first time I got in the huddle was a run play. You know, I'm going up the line of scrimmage, and this is kind of a funny story, but Chris Dishman, who was the defensive cornerback for the Houston Oilers, uh-huh. I come out the first play, and he's guarding me, and he's in a bump-and-run coverage on me, so he's right in my face. He starts talking trash, you know, but he's doing it a funny way, and he goes, hey, I hear the white boy can run. He says, well, let's see it, man. Come on, let's see how fast you are. And I'm, like, scared to death, you know. And so it was just a run, so I came out and blocked him. And then the next time out, I'm standing in the huddle, and Jim goes, and he calls a pass play, and he goes, Beeps. He says, listen, if Dishman's pressed on you again, you just take him deep. I don't care, you know, what your route is, you just take him deep because I'm throwing it to you. Well, I'm telling you, I was so nervous. I'm thinking to myself as I'm running the line of scrimmage, please don't press me. You know, I'm scared to death. Sure enough, Dishman presses me, and I get a great release on him and beat him for a 63-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
And I got back to the bench area. And all I could think about was my family just going nuts. I mean, the first pass I ever thrown my way goes for a 63-yard touchdown was crazy. Well, here's the funny part about it is the next third down I get in the huddle and it's a run play again, and I'm running out there, and Dishman comes up, bump and run. He backs up a couple steps, and he goes, dang, I guess a white boy can run. So it was kind of a funny thing.
That's great. That is quite a memorable entrance. Into the NFL.
Yes, it was.
Hey, one more question about your first season, your rookie season. I just watched something about the Hall of Famers. I think there was some kind of a reunion or something recently where they had all these Hall of Fame guys, just, you know, like Don Shula and other names that equal football. And they were interviewing these guys, and every single one of them, was in awe of the fact that they were there at the Hall of Fame, and they were like little kids surrounded by their favorite players. And
yeah.
How much, I mean, when you get to the NFL, where did you, Chadron State, right?
Yeah.
So you get to the NFL, and you're around all these guys, and you get to play either with or against these players who you've been watching, you know, on Sundays. what does that feel like?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think initially, when you first get into the league and you start seeing and meeting a couple of the guys, when I first went to the combine, again, you had mentioned that I came from Chadron State.
So yeah.
That's basically obscurity, you know. And then I go to the combine, there's Deion Sanders, Troy Aikman, Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
You know, 1989. I'm thinking to myself, this is kind of cool, you know. And I was so naive to the fact that I really didn't really know what I was doing. So then I get into the National Football League, I start playing, I start catching balls from Jim Kelly.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest with you, I never really, it was never really an awestruck thing. I just loved to compete. I loved to play. So I thought I was just going out there doing my job and was just wanting to make the team and be a big part of it, you know.
That's great.
I was never really, I was never really a guy that looked like, oh, there's Thurman Thomas. Not really. I mean, they're human beings. I mean, the thing about it is when I go out to some area or if I'm with a bunch of guys and we're out, you know, if people come up to you, you know, we put on shoes in the morning and we, you know, put on our pants and go to work. You know, we're just human beings,
yep.
I guess. And sometimes I think that an athlete gets really put on a pedestal where they shouldn't be, in a sense. But on the flip side of that, the athlete has to understand that they are by these small little kids.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful of what you say and do, because the kids are looking up to you, you know, and you're held to a higher esteem in that fact.
It is really funny though. I think you see that how people are how you guys are put on a pedestal, because just from that Hall of Fame thing that I was talking about. All these guys in, you know, on their own, they were phenomenal players or coaches or whatever,
yeah.
And they're like the little kids. They're just a normal guy like all the other guys, and it's got to be kind of an interesting feeling, and at the same time, just kind of doing your job, like you said.
Right. Yeah, well, once that's you great. Get out there and you're playing, you really don't even realize who you're playing with.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about the rest of your NFL career. Some Bills fans might not know where you went after Buffalo. When was it that you moved on to Carolina? I believe it was.
Well, I was a free agent with Buffalo, and Buffalo decided that they were going to go into a younger with some younger receivers. I think it was Russell Copeland and a couple other guys.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to leave Buffalo, but it was, you know, my time had come to an end. And so then me, Frank Reich, and Pete Matchelars, we all went as free agents down to Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and so we played there 1 year. And then after that 1 year was, being used to Buffalo and then going to Carolina Panthers, it was kind of like, I mean, great, but just horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, just not good. And then, you know, none of us stayed there. I mean, Pete, I think, went to Detroit, I think Frank went to Detroit, too,
yeah,
and I landed up at the Packers. So
cool.
We only landed 1 year there, and then I played 2 years with the Packers and went to 2 Super Bowls.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, you and Mike Lodish, I found, are the only two players who ever played in 6 Super Bowls.
Yeah.
It's pretty...
I was actually, because I was hurt for a Super Bowl, I actually was the first guy to ever be on 6 Super Bowl teams,
mm-hmm.
and Mike was the first guy to actually suit up for 6 Super Bowls.
Nice.
So we both have 6 rings, and actually I just saw him a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
We're the only two guys ever to get 6 rings. So it's kind of, I mean, I was kind of spoiled. I played 9 years and went to 6 Super Bowls.
Yeah!
You know, I had my wide receiver coach in Buffalo there, Charlie Joyner, he played 18 years and never got close to Super Bowl.
Wow. 18?
Yeah, he let me know that, too.
Yeah. I bet.
Hey, John. I wanted to ask, you know, it's often perceived as, you know, Green Bay and Buffalo have, you know, two of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL. What is your take on Green Bay fans as compared to Buffalo fans? And, you know, where do you think Buffalo Bills fans rank on a whole when looking at the NFL?
Yeah, you know, you bring up a good point because they are very similar in the sense that they are blue-collar people. They just love the sport. They're very knowledgeable of the sport. You know, you go out in the community, and they know who you are, and they treat you. I mean, they treat you great. But I will tell you this. You know, the weather's very similar. So I mean, there's a lot of it's small town atmosphere. But I'll tell you this. There's nothing like the Western New York people. I've lived in several different areas.
Yeah.
And I live in the Illinois area right now, and by far in my mind, Western New York people are the nicest. Most genuine, most real people that you can meet as a whole. You know, if it wasn't for my family living here, to be honest with you, I probably would live in Buffalo or I would live down in Charlotte or somewhere, but I would only because Frank Reich lives in Charlotte.
Oh, yeah?
But
cool.
It's a great area, and there's none better people in the world.
That's great. I wonder how often that happens when – you know, a lot of players today get moved around to different cities all the time. I wonder how often you really get attached to the place you're playing, or if it's just really something special about Western New York.
Well, it is special about Western New York. And I'll tell you what, not only that, what we had with that team and the community and the organization at that time, be it Marv, and obviously Mr. Wilson and John Butler and Bill Pullian, that was something that may never be seen again. You know, it's funny because I was just this last spring, I'm doing a thing back in Buffalo with Kitna. And he even says, and he's playing now with the Bengals, you know, he says, man, he says, you guys had something special here, didn't you? You know, even guys that play today know about what we had back in the mid to early 90s.
That's great.
It was just something that's very, very unique when the community and the players are so close and the organization is so close, because the guys that were on that team were, I mean, we were just close. And you don't see that real often, especially nowadays.
Yeah, actually, one thing that I thought was really great about the Super Bowl teams, you mentioned the talent and how super talented you guys were, but I think overall there was just a great team attitude.
Yeah.
It was a team. You guys were positive, mostly not selfish. There were lots of strong believers on the team too. Some Christians, including yourself.
Yeah. You know, you bring up a good point. We had our guys that were flamboyant.
Uh-huh.
And everybody knows who they were. But you know what? Those guys were great guys. I mean, I think of Thurman Thomas and,
yeah.
And you know, Thurman was a moody guy, and, you know, he'd be the first to tell you that, but Thurman's a great guy.
That's cool.
I mean, he was fun to be around. He showed up, and he practiced, and he played hard. You know, Bruce, same thing. I mean, he would practice and play hard, and it was something that we all got along. You had the bickering Bills in 1989, but, you know, there was a few instances that guys had a little bit of an argument, and that got completely blown out of proportion. But guys really genuinely liked each other. Not seen at other teams that I've been a part of. And you're right, we did have a strong Christian base on that team. And, you know, was that part of it? Yeah, that was part of it. But we had a lot of guys that were true character guys that kept that team together. And it was an awesome thing.
That's cool. Well, I remembered just in the comeback game, which obviously is one of the most amazing not only Bills games, but NFL games of all time. And just the story around that. Actually, maybe some listeners might not know is where Frank Reich came to the game that day, and he had that song, the Michael English song, In Christ Alone.
In Christ Alone,
yeah. Yeah, and just the way the whole game worked out, you know, not saying that God gave you guys the victory, but it was really just a cool chance to talk about perseverance and what really matters, and he got to share that song. So it seemed like not only just great team attitude and everything, but just in general, very positive, strong, like you said, close relationships and some really cool things that were going on.
You know, nobody knows that story better than me because I was Frank's roommate.
Really?
You know, so I got the inside scoop on that whole deal. But, you know, it's something that, you know, I agree. I don't think God could care less of who wins or loses the game. You know, God's on everybody's team. You know? So who wins or who loses? What God cares about is how you're reacting to your win or loss. You know, are you giving him the glory in your loss, or are you giving him the glory in your win? You know, and both things. But, you know, in the sense of Frank, it was kind of really a neat thing because I remember him coming into the room that night, and he goes, Beebs, he says, I got to tell you, man, I can't get this song out of my head, and I don't know what God's going to do with this song, but I really believe that tomorrow's game is going to have something to do with this song. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, this guy's whack. You know? I was like, what is he talking about? You know, a song? So and the next morning, he wakes up, and he's out, and it's a really cold morning, windy, and everything in that nature, and he's out in his truck listening to this song again, and he's writing down the words. And he comes back in the pregame meal, and he said, Beebs, I got to show you this, man. He says, I'm just writing it in Christ alone and writing all these words, and I'm thinking, I think that's great, you know, it's an awesome thing, you know. And then he says, I'm telling you, something's going to happen with this in this game day. I was like, well, you know what, Frank? And then I started believing him because Frank's a real believable person. Mm. I mean, he's not a guy that just talks to hear himself talk, you know.
Yeah.
So I said, well, maybe God has something in store with this thing, you know. And sure enough, it's funny how the game turns out.
Yeah.
And he's in the locker room, and they calling him down to, you know, it's just chaos. You know, after this thing, and they're calling him down into to do this press conference, and he gets all the way down there, and he says, oh, wait, guys, I'll be right back. Runs all the way back up his locker, pulls out this song out of his pocket, comes back down, and in front of millions, you know, watching this thing, he just starts reading this song. And what a testimony. I'm telling you, that was so awesome. I get goosebumps thinking about it right now.
It's great.
And just to hear Frank talk about it before it, you know, that all happened, he knew God had something in store, and it was a cool thing.
Yep, absolutely. Don, you mentioned that you had two kids. You told a story about them. That's what I was going to ask. So you're married, and you have four kids.
Yep.
Are any of them playing football?
Yeah, I have... I have 11-year-old. I have four kids, three girls, one boy. My oldest is a freshman in high school. She's a Amanda, and then Chad is 11. And then I have two more daughters that are 8 and 5.
Cool.
And yes, Chad does play football, and he loves it. And I'll be honest with you, he's way better than I was.
Ah, that's great.
Yeah, he's something.
So you'll get him. You'll get him through the House of Speed, and he'll be running a 4.140. Yeah.
I don't know. He's been doing House of Speed since he was five, and now he basically, at 11 years old, he's basically he's a demonstrator in all my camps. We go around, and for example, we do this juke and jive drill. It's kind of a one-on-one thing where the kid, it's kind of like a tag drill. Well, he's 11 in fifth grade, and he's going against a junior in high school last time. We just had our camp in August, and he beat this kid.
Wow.
In a juke and jive drill.
Nice.
It's funny to watch because he's something. And he's not just because he's my boy, but he's way ahead of what I was.
That's great. Hey, we'll be looking for Chad Beebe in, 10 years or so down the road.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but you need a lot of breaks. A lot of things got to go your way.
Yeah, I'm sure. Hey, how long have you been involved with football, Don? When did you get started?
I didn't play organized football until I was a freshman in high school.
Really?
Nowadays, they're starting out like 5, 6,
right,
7 years old, tackle football. But, I never lifted a weight until I went to college. Yeah.
Wow.
Times have changed, haven't they?
And we mentioned Chadron State before. Where is that?
I didn't know where it was either, but it's in the northwest corner of Nebraska,
okay,
about an hour and a half south of Mount Rushmore.
Cool. There's not much out there.
No, there isn't. There isn't much.
Well, that's great. So you played your college ball out there, and then came to the Bills, and we know the rest.
Yep.
You're coaching now at Aurora Christian School, a high school. And what do you tell your high school guys who aspire to play NFL football? What does it take? Well, you mentioned you got to get some breaks, but what does it take to make it to the NFL?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things involved in that. And I never tell a kid, if he has a dream or if she has a dream, to make it a professional level or get their college paid for, they know the odds. It's virtually almost impossible, really. But who knows that you're not going to be that one out of a million.
Yeah.
And so I always tell a kid this, and I'm certainly not trying to build a pipe dream in a kid, but if you have aspirations to be a professional athlete or a great college athlete, then you go for it. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it. You give it 100%, and if it doesn't work out, hey, I promise you one thing, you're probably going to be very good at something else because you've dedicated yourself to being good. And if it works out, hey, then obviously it's an awesome thing. But what I don't like is the reverse of that, where a kid says he wants to do it, but he's not willing to work for it.
Yeah.
And then they just say, I can't do it. Well, you know what, that's a quitter's attitude in my mind.
Yeah.
And certainly, if a kid wants to do it, then you try as hard as you can. If it doesn't work out, you'll be good at something.
So it almost goes back to what you were talking about with the one play that kind of epitomizes that in the Super Bowl with Leon Lett.
Yeah.
That whole attitude of perseverance and just give it 100%.
Yeah, because you never know the outcome until it happens.
Yep.
And then when it happens, you can't bring it back. You know, if you say you can't do it, and then you go through your whole high school career, and then you're 40 years old and married and have four kids, and you look back and you say, geez, I wish. Well, it's too late now.
Yeah.
So I always tell a kid, don't ever put yourself in that position. I get a lot of dads that come up to me and tell me how great they were in high school, and they could have played this and that and that. But you know what? They probably couldn't because they didn't have the work ethic.
Yep.
You know?
It's very important. And I think that was a huge part of the Bills' success in the 90s, was the attitude and the work ethic. It seemed great.
No doubt.
Yep. Hey, just a couple more questions, Don. I read that you won't attend another Super Bowl unless the Bills make it back. You think you'll be at Super Bowl 40?
No, I meant that. I won't ever go to another Super Bowl unless the Bills are there.
You think we got a chance this year?
Well, you know what? Why not believe the unbelievable? You just never know. I mean, every game really comes down to about three or four plays. And if you start to become more consistent in making these plays in the course of that game, and you get the breaks and things fall your way, who knows? Certainly, you can look at how they played last Sunday and say there ain't no way they're going to the Super Bowl. But you know what? Maybe not this year, but certainly, before my lifetime is over, the Bills will be in the Super Bowl.
And we are looking forward to that for sure.
I'm going to be there.
Yeah, great. I haven't fallen off the bandwagon yet, but yeah, there's definitely some questions in Buffalo for sure. I don't remember the Super Bowl team starting off with the bad early starts like last year's team here, and then this year's team is starting out now. But you know, they turned it around last year. They had a great end of the season. Drew Bledsoe and the defense and everybody turned it around. I think they went 8-3 or something in the last 11 games. It was great. So that is perseverance right there. It didn't end up, they didn't get make the playoffs, which was crazy. But
well, they got the running game. The ingredients you need to win a Super Bowl is you have to have a great defense and you have to have a running game, and certainly having a quarterback. Because really, that's the only question mark they have right now is quarterback, and I think JP is actually going to be a pretty good one. It may take them a little longer than maybe this year, but they have all the ingredients now. I don't know how long Spikes is out, but I haven't heard yet. But him getting hurt last week, that would be a huge loss.
Yeah, the Bills just announced today it is that he tore his Achilles tendon in his right leg, and he'll miss
for the year.
Yeah.
So that's a huge loss, and that's too bad. Because he was kind of that leader of that team.
Right.
And their defense, you know, arguably is the best defense in the National Football League right now.
They've got some great players.
But losing him is going to be a big loss. So I don't know who they got to back him up, but he's got big shoes to fill.
How closely do you get to follow the Bills being out in Aurora, Illinois? You got the NFL ticket?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
I watch the Bills every Sunday.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a Bills fan, so we just root for them every Sunday.
That's great. Well, you're at the right place. We started this show this year because iTunes has the new podcasting thing, so it's easy to get these shows out to lots of people. And we're no experts. We're just Bills fans, and so we put this together, and we have comments and emails come in, and it's just fun to be a Bills fan. And I think that, you know, it started back in the 60s probably, but I think the 90s team got a lot of people excited, and it was a great thing to be a part of, even as a fan, as the 12th man. So, yeah.
Those days were special. There's no doubt about it. But, the Super Bowl day is coming. I just hope it's in Ralph's lifetime because he deserves it.
Yes, that would be great. That would be awesome.
Yep.
Hey, I got one more question for you, Don. Who you mentioned a couple guys? Who from the '90s teams, the Bills? Do you still keep in touch with?
Frank, obviously. We just spent some time with them last fall.
You said he's down in Charlotte.
Yeah, and Pete Metzler is down there. Obviously,
cool.
Tasker. I talked to him several times. Just saw him a little bit ago, And then Jim, talk to him every once in a while during the course of the year. You know, it's certainly never going to be like it was.
Yeah.
You know, but when you have great friendships, you can talk to each other a couple times a year, and it's like you never miss a beat. You know, I come back there for alumni weekend a couple weeks ago,
right.
And it's kind of like we never missed a beat. You know, just hanging out and just, you know, picking up on what everybody's doing now and catching up on that stuff. So it's something that friendships never die, and those are the type of friendships that never will. I'm very close to a lot of those guys.
That is great. Well, Don, we totally appreciate you joining us tonight on the Buffalo Bills Review, and we wish you luck with your House of Speed, which is, don't forget, www.houseofspeed.com, or what was the phone number again?
877-82-SPEED.
That's right, 877-82-SPEED. And with your team, I hope you make back to the playoffs and have a great year with the high school kids at Aurora. And thanks again for coming on, Don. That is great.
All right, Greg, thanks.
Well, that does it for the interview with Don Beebe tonight, and I hope you enjoyed that. It was a pleasure for us to do, and hopefully we can do a few more of these coming up in the future. Who knows who might be next, but if you have some ideas, drop us a line at theshow@buffalobillsreview.com or leave a comment on our comment line, 716-989-4180. We'll see you next time.